Let's sing and swing.
Evening visit with Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt.
2 o'clock on Thursday afternoon in Manila.
Forbidden Diary, the true World War II story of Natalie Crowder, based on her secret journal written from a Japanese prison camp in the Philippines. Episode 28, Mataitsu no Hika, Tomide-san. Previously on Forbidden Diary.
Tomibe-san is leaving.
Who's taking over for him?
A Lieutenant Ora.
Do you know anything about him?
No, I don't, Natalie.
And now, episode 28.
July 5, 1944. 親愛なる妻へ。 My dearest wife. アメリカ人の言い方を借りるなら、もう一方の靴が落ちた。捕虜脱走の件で交渉軍から処分が下った。 As the Americans like to say, the other shoe has dropped. General Cole finally punished me for the prisoner escapes. He's demoted me, and I am no longer commandant of Camp Holmes. I'm being transferred to another position, but I don't know when and where. Please do not worry, sweetheart. I've been expecting something like this to happen. After the escapes, I received a minor rebuke and have been waiting for my real punishment. The truth is, I'm relieved that the anticipation is over, and I won't miss being commandant, as the position has been difficult and will only get worse. And so, for now, I must wait for orders from High Command. Wouldn't it be marvelous if they transferred me home so we can all be together again? Tomorrow, Lieutenant Ora will take my place as commandant. I wrote to you about him last year when I was a supply officer with the Army Reserve in Baguio. He was the rice inspector who challenged my orders because I was not in the regular army. I can't think of a worse person to be in charge of Camp Holmes. Ora resents anyone who has a university degree, and most of the men in camp have them. Before the war, he was a village chief in the backcountry of Honshu. Ora is used to people bowing at his command, and the executive committee and doctors will challenge him. My fear is that his inflexible mind and misplaced arrogance will cause him to rule Camp Holmes like a primitive warlord and treat Miss McKim like a servant.
July 6, 1944. We were called by bell at 3 to be introduced to Lieutenant Ora. Many were asleep, had to dress in a rush and go without makeup. Men and women were addressed separately. Aided by Miss McKim, Lieutenant Ora's talk was brief.
Lieutenant Ora says that he knows that we were living more comfortably before the war, but now we are interned here.
2 days ago,
Lieutenant Ora visited camps in Manila where internees receive as much food as the people of Japan.
Philippines. 十分な食料を生産できとらん。だから、自分たちで育てにゃならん。
Because the Philippines does not produce all of the food it needs, we will have to grow our own food.
貴様らの仲間の2人がキャンプを脱走したが、わしが指揮を取る限り、
そのようなことは二度と起こらん。脱走など考えただけでも後悔することになると思え。
Lieutenant Oda says that the escape of two internees is unacceptable, and that any other attempts will further restrict our lives.
During his talk to the men, six planes roared over very high with a new sound in a new diamond-shaped formation. Or as one man later said, the double V, which was recently begun by the US and is not used by the Japanese, so far as we know. July 7, 1944. As we washed dishes side by side, Miss Spencer told me adorable stories about two small boys in camp. The other day, Robert declared to his mother,
"When I grow up, I'll stand in the store line for you."
Robert and his friend Derek discuss continually what work detail they will join when they grow up. One favors the garbage wagon, or the wrecking crew. Another, the carpenter, or shoe shop. But the point is, they are going to join. They want to. None of these tasks are looked down upon by their young eyes. Robert also told his mother,
"Mummy, when I get bigger, you'll have to get me a larger bed so I can move over to the men's side."
This endless future in here, he accepts it. There is no hurt pride, no looking back or forward, because he has no comparison. July 8, 1944. All the guards are dead tired from long hours of work and guarding. Little sleep and little food. They doze a great deal. On the wrecking detail, our men wake the guards when they hear a truck coming so they won't be caught sleeping. One even left his gun behind. When one of our workmen noticed, the guard stopped the car and made him run back for it. It was a narrow escape for the guard, and he was grateful. July 10, 1944. I washed clothes in the morning and rested all afternoon. Rice and tea for breakfast, rice and cucumber for lunch, and beans for supper with sautéed cabbage. What a life. I can't get my mind off vegetables.
Camp Holmes Daily News. Our new commandant, Lieutenant Ora, says that all available land within our campgrounds must eventually be placed under cultivation to produce an increased share of our food supply. Every available person must share in this effort. A supply of cucumber, bok choy, and Swiss chard seed is on hand to be used when the proper season arrives. Onion seed is being tested and will be used if germination takes place.
July 11, 1944. An astounding rumor circulated around camp under people's breath that Russia, Spain, and Portugal had declared war on Japan. July 12, 1944. My morale is at rock bottom, for I can't do any work. The slightest exertion, and I'm all in, whether it's laundry or rice picking. It infuriates me. I am restless, irritable, sarcastic, sour, cranky. Everything which can be included in a thoroughly nasty disposition, due to the rotten diet and low blood count. Sell my soul for a good active day's work. July 14, 1944. Camp funds have given us a banana each for several days this week. The Japanese only give us rice and some fish, part of which is bad. They don't give us 10% of what they promised the first of the year. July 15, 1944. I finally distinguished myself at quiz night for knowing that the boniest fish to the square inch was shad, that the Pilgrims came before the Puritans, and that Washington's wife was the widow Custis. July 16, 1944. I found a whole shiny green pepper on the road, probably dropped from the truck. We ate it with relish, even though others think we stole it. July 17, 1944. My blood count is 3,200,000. Hemoglobin up from 69 to 75. Iron helps. The doctor says my symptoms are vitamin C and B2 deficiency combined. He may give me a course of niacin. Don Zimmerman is down with dysentery again, and there are two more suspects. July 18, 1944. I started my first dosage of niacin today. After my misery doubled and trebled, my head has finally cleared, stomach is settled, and appetite returned. I feel weak, bleak, but ashore at last. They began digging, pounding, renovating the underground dugout next door. Alas, camp is no place to be sick, for there is no quiet or peace anywhere for long. July 21, 1944. I picked rice while it poured and blew outside, introducing our third rainy season, which we were sure we would never experience in here. And if there is to be a fourth, we will have to take that too. But a number of us won't last. Our underground dugout is leaking. My girlfriend stayed here for an evening, curling herself up under the blanket, finishing her book and loving the quietness. Everyone goes to bed early now, since all of our light bulbs have burned out with no replacements. Roll call is at 7, and many sleep for hours in the daytime. Incentive and energy are lost together. One poor fellow has been given an extra serving of misery.
That poor son of a gun. Did you hear about Robert Enid?
No, Arthur. What about him?
Someone from the outside sent him a shaving stick with a note saying it was all that's left of his house in the provinces. It's all gone. There's nothing left but the foundation.
July 22, 1944. I read in the committee minutes that Mr. Furuya can no longer buy what we wish to get from the market, only what he can find. Each week, the minutes tick off the facts and atmosphere of our days in here, the increasing tension. And now, they reflect what it's like when Lieutenant Ora is in charge, instead of Tomibe-san. Miss McKim says that committee meetings with Lieutenant Ora consist of nodding and yeses, while with Mr. Tomibe, they discussed and worked out problems together.
I miss Tomibe-san, Natalie. I've been only able to talk with him a few times.
How is he?
Very depressed. I always let him know we miss him and how boring committee meetings are without him. With Lieutenant Oda, all we do is bob our heads up and down and say yes. He won't let us discuss anything.
I heard that they're starting to call them yes meetings.
They'd be right. I did get a smile from Tomibe-san the other day when he caught me bowing, saying yes over and over to Lieutenant Oda. He'd been watching my pantomime when he caught my eye. I was just about to wink when we saw an officer observing us. Luckily, we both stopped in time.
What's he been doing with himself?
Sitting around, waiting for his new orders. It's just demoralizing. He's lost his confidence. I felt so bad for him the last time we spoke.
Tomibe-san, 新しいオーダーはいつ頃来るかご存知ですか?
Do you know when you'll get your new orders, Tomibe-san?
いえ、一日中事務所に座って指示を待つこと以外何もできることはありません。 No, I have nothing to do all day but sit in my office and wait for them.
I'm so sorry.
Do you know the play Cyrano de Bergerac, Miss McKim?
Yes.
Then do you remember his last message to Rosamond? When I died, I died. That is what's happened to me.
No, surely not.
But it's the truth. Two prisoners escaped. This is the first time I've ever been told my work was no good.
That's just not true. You're an excellent administrator. You did extremely well under very difficult circumstances.
No, you are too kind.
Do you know what you'll be doing next?
Fighting, I suppose.
I am so sorry this happened.
Will you sing Auld Lang Syne for me before I go?
Of course. We all will.
I know. Let's go on a picnic before I go. Oh dear. It is because I say things like that that the army says I am no good.
The Imperial Army is lucky to have you. You are an honorable man. You have never given in to hypocrisy or greed or the inequities in camp.
Perhaps I have. Perhaps I was too lenient. Lieutenant Aura thinks that prisoners spend too much time on private cooking and not enough on community farming.
Please, don't be so hard on yourself.
If I had restricted private cooking, it might have forced the wealthy prisoners to share their food. So, perhaps he will do what I could not.
And that's what he said, Natalie.
Jerry thinks the puppet government in Baguio has been against Mr. Tomibe because he wouldn't play their game.
I agree. He never went to their sake parties. He couldn't stand the hypocrisy, and I'm sure they knew it, which probably worked against him, I'm afraid.
That's for sure. Well, his prejudiced, small-minded countrymen will never appreciate his imagination, nor his ability to understand other people's problems.
Not the Lieutenant Oudas of this world, I'm afraid.
You know, Mr. Tomibe is just a lonely wanderer, like any of us in any country who won't conform.
July 23rd, 1944. Jerry spends just about every day fixing something in the dugout. Although there are the usual groans and complaints, Jerry is happy to be working. Yesterday it was a sump he was digging to hold a leak, then it was patching the wind holes. Jerry came into our dugout today with a bamboo frame he'd made at the shop to put on our dirt couch, but it was far too wide to get into the door. Instead of going in sideways, he went straight in and stood there looking boyish, with the frame stuck halfway and no place to put it. At supper, he and the children were talking about the bamboo frame, and at the remembrance of the look on his face, I began to laugh. Oh, we all laughed, till we rocked. Jerry said he hadn't heard me laugh like that in years. And then he told a funny story.
Hey, you're never going to believe this one. Emil told me that he got a bill from the Elks Club in Seattle.
What?
Yeah, they said he owed him $15 in dues. And get this, the letter started with, "Dear Mr. Gerard, we were so glad to hear you were concentrated."
No.
It's so crazy, it has to be true.
Oh, how's he going to pay them, pray tell?
They're just going to have to wait, aren't they?
Boy, they don't know the half of it. July 24, 1944. For the last few months, I've watched Jerry rubbing his hands and his legs as though to stir the circulation. My own hands ache, are numb and cold. It's getting harder to write. I've turned into a tottering ancient, as weak as a cat after my sponge bath. We are all failing slowly. Panic is nearer the surface than it was for us, as well as the Japanese. Nipponese cities are being bombed every hour. Osaka is a mass of ruins. Nagasaki also. Small signs indicate America returning to the Philippines, the strongest being the wild flight of currency and tightness of supplies. July 25, 1944. Peg brought an armful of sweet potato tops, and I boiled them. We only had rice at noon. Half of this week has been spent in the dugout with no lights. Cold wind blowing, alone for hours, but the quiet and privacy was a boon. July 27, 1944. Jerry told me about an interesting conversation he had with Mr. Yamato in the cookhouse.
It was kind of strange. He kept saying how beautiful it is here and asking me how we prisoners live the simple life of Thoreau's Walden.
What planet is he on?
Well, it's Mr. Yamato, so, you know.
What did you say to him?
I told him the nearest I've gotten to birds and wildflowers here is when I'm cutting down trees on the hill. He kept telling me how bad it is on the outside and how hard it is to see people so hungry.
Worse than here.
Yeah, I guess so.
Oh, no. Nida. Was he talking about Baguio specifically?
I'm not sure. I think he was probably talking about Japan. He kept saying that America has plenty to eat. The poor guy's miserable with beriberi.
Join the club.
Yeah, well, when Yamato started to leave, he looked like he wanted to shake hands, so I offered him my hand, and he took it like a lifeline. Just wouldn't let go.
I imagined Jerry sticking out his huge paw and Mr. Yamato grabbing it and hanging on in a long shake, loath to let go. The Japanese know their country is on the downside, with their own homes being battered at last. They are hungry, homesick, and lonely. When we talk about war in the future, no one feels real bitterness toward the Japanese. Except for those responsible for the horrible treatment after Bataan and at the prison camps. I feel sorry for the Japanese rank and file. They have known hunger and the desperate insecurity of being caught in the net of economic pressure and the drive for power. As in our camp, very few, if any, can throw the first stone. July 31, 1944. Japanese class is always a bright spot for me these days. Miss McKim makes lessons fun with her delightful stories about our guards.
Oh, and American expressions are all the rage with them. Take it easy is Mr. Kaito's favorite, along with on the job and asleep at the switch. I think he got that last one from me.
We got to reminiscing about Mr. Tomibe's storytelling and how he described ancient methods of torture. Prisoners buried up to their necks, sitting on spiked bamboos. The guards jabbing their faces and necks with bamboo spears. He did note that this was not done anymore. His samurai stories were moving, impressive, for one felt that Mr. Tomibe was deeply stirred and imbued with the samurai spirit. He said his father taught him the harakiri ceremony. With a quick, strong thrust, he pantomimed the dagger going in, the pull around and up, then back again and out. Oh, the raised hand signifying the victim wishes his head cut off by the sword to end the agony. Oh, we'd half joked that we'd all have bad dreams that night, but it is a weighty and serious matter. The Japanese see the end, and the number of their days, if they follow the old way. Mr. Tomibe is living with this idea, and may do it, as he said he must after he turns camp over. This code seems dreadful to us. It makes no use of defeat, only pride, and no humility of learning. They cannot bear to lose face, to bow to disaster. Millie asked what we've all been wondering since Mr. Tomibe was removed from duty.
Miss McKim, do you think he was serious about committing hara-kiri? You don't think he's going to kill himself just because they fired him for Wick and Richie escaping, do you?
I hope not, Millie.
I sat in class wondering if Mr. Tomibe is modern enough to break away, to learn from defeat what he could never learn from victory, as we have for these 2 years. Will he help his children to carry forward a new Japan?
Or will he take the old way of annihilation? We hope Mr. Tomibe decides to survive. August 2nd, 1944. Small lettuce and onion gardens are popping up around camp in corners beside walls, in coconut shells, boxes, or bamboo, like ours. The cubicle owner's social cachet has skyrocketed even further. Many who signed petitions against family units now eat in them. Those who don't live in a cubicle look for invitations from close friends who do. Even the rabid opposition has secret yearnings.
August 4th, 1944. Committee minutes. Item 1. Command requests a list of all knives, bolos, nail files, and scissors in camp, and the reports detailing the working hours of every man in camp. Item 2. Lieutenant Ora reviewed the garden project and said he would try to get some fertilizer, tools, and seeds. Item 3. Poultry for July showed a total of 298 eggs from camp chickens. We now have 47 hens, 12 roosters, 16 chicks, totaling 75. Mr. Hayakawa has donated 2 drakes for children's diets. Item 4. The rice ration for the first 10 days of August has been reduced to approximately 19 pounds of rice per day for 500 people. Lieutenant Ora is allowing the kitchen to buy sweet potatoes, cassava, or regular potatoes to make up the balance. Until after the 20th of this month, there is no hope of receiving any eggs for the sick requiring special diets.
August 5th, 1944. Last night's parody of Hamlet was hilarious, but Mr. Yamato's flowery review in the camp news was even funnier. Millie read it in the women's barracks.
He's outdone himself this time. Did you read it in the camp newsletter?
Read what?
Mr. Yamato's a theater critic.
I read it. Jim shouldn't have published it.
I don't think Jim had a choice in the matter.
Go on and read it, Millie.
Oh, this ought to be good.
Many years have passed since I was interested in Shakespeare's Hamlet or Goethe's Faust. This eve, I had the chance, unexpectedly, to see Camp Hamlet. Though I had already some Ahnung that it was...
What's an Ahnung? What's an Ahnung?
I think it's German.
Mr. Yamato knows German?
Probably not, but he knows about Faust, so he must have picked up some German words at university. He's a middle school teacher.
So what's Ahnung mean? Oh, it means an inkling or a hunch.
What?
I learned it in German class.
Although I had already some Ahnung that it was a changed Hamlet from the old drama, I went to see it from curiosity and ennui. Anyone want to know what ennui means?
I do. What's ennui?
Everyone's attitude around here.
I'll explain it to you later, Colleen.
I went to see it from curiosity and ennui. And lo... And lo, there the Hamlet was played, within such limited dining room, with little clothing, except those female persons. And to make the matters worse, with no curtains or back scene, it must need the most skillful actors or actresses to play its performance.
Y'all bet it did.
Yeah, you tell him, Gertrude.
Darn tootin'.
I played Gertrude in high school, too.
And then? It was played well, admiringly well, with profound humor. I like best the musical melodies, and when all persons sang together in comical yet mournful chorus, tears involuntarily spread from my eyes.
Oh, yeah. I was crying, too.
Hold on, because now I'm getting to the cerebral part. He says, it is humor in psychological terminology.
Huh?
Well, isn't he just a little old Sigmund Freud?
All passed smoothly without a hitch, except the carrying of Ophelia and doctor's treatment. All combined, Camp Hamlet, the masterpiece, was born.
Whew! Yamato's lucky the guards can't read English, because they'd never let him live this one down.
Wait, I'm not done. To conclude, you are very artistic, musical, profound in aesthetics, and serene in this living.
Oh, yeah. It's all this serene living around here that does it for me.
That is why I cannot help admiring you. God bless you. Good night. S. Yamato.
Boy, Mr. Yamato sure polishing the apple. He must really think the Japanese are going to lose the war.
Where have you been, Doris? They all think they're going to lose.
Everywhere is the feeling that the time is drawing near. Word has filtered to camp that the Chinese are saying the Americans will arrive next month. And last night we overheard the missionaries quietly pray for as peaceful a transition with as little violence and bloodshed as possible. August 7, 1944. It drives Jerry crazy not to be able to feed his family. Beatty is 13, still weighs 80 pounds, and is hungry all of the time. I told him to come to me when he can't stand it, and we would talk it out.
Don't we have anything, Mom?
You know if there was extra food, we would give it to you.
But my stomach hurts.
I know, sweetie. The best thing you can do is keep busy. It'll help you forget that you're hungry.
I tried that, and it doesn't work.
Your dad's hungrier than all of us. He's a big man and needs more food.
I hate how Daddy looks when he gives us his food.
I know. I hate it too, but he can't help it.
Okay, Mom. I'll be a good soldier.
You already are, BD. Try to keep the faith.
With all the planes we're seeing, the war's gotta be over soon, right, Mom?
That's right. You just have to tighten your belt another notch and hang on a little longer. June tells me that she is trying to make her dad eat more. She said he fibs and denies himself, but two can play at that game. When I told Jerry he's been caught cold, he smiled, deeply touched. August 9, 1944. June and Beatty were still empty when they finished lunch, though the beef broth was good, and sautéed radish better than it sounds with Jerry's pickled onions. What would we do without Jerry's versatility? Is constantly sprouting ideas and practical efforts. I can do nothing but conserve the little strength I have on a dirt couch, reading Durant on all the Chinese philosophers. August 10, 1944. People belittle Mr. Yamato, but beneath his silliness, he's shown himself to be brave.
What did Yamato do now?
This time he really stuck up for us, Phil.
Oh, yeah?
You know how the guards are ordering us to fix the guardhouse roof because they say it's not their job?
Yeah.
Well, Yamato complained to Lieutenant Ora about it.
No kidding. What did Ora say?
But Oura-san, they're civilian prisoners, not the military.
Yatsura-wa-kou-fuku-shitan-ga? Sore-tomo-horyo-ni-natan-ga? Did they surrender, or were they captured?
Captured? But they're still civilians.
Are we internees? or are they, Mr. Yamato?
But Ora-san...
The prisoners will fix the roof, or when they ask for rice, they may not get it.
Yes, Ora-san.
These prisoners are fortunate. The Imperial Army pays 2 times more for them than military prisoners.
Wow. Twice as much as our military prisoners, huh?
Or is full of it.
Well, if he isn't, God help our GIs.
August 11, 1944. The Imperial Army finally decided what to do with Mr. Tomibe. Miss McKim heard about his fate at the committee meeting.
Y'all heard right. They're going to send Tomibe-san down to Bulacan, just north of Manila, to buy rice for the Japanese military.
Is that good or bad?
He might be safer near Manila than here.
Really? And why would that be?
When the U.S. takes over, the guerrillas up here are going to want revenge. Maybe he'll have better luck down in Manila.
I don't know about any of you, but I'm starting to miss Tomibe-san already. I think we've been dealt a bad hand with this Aura character.
We're all going to miss Tomibe-san for a lot of reasons.
He's not going to miss us.
I think he will. We made a strong impression on him.
Yeah, I bet we did.
No, we really did, Dr. Benedetti. He's told me a story several times about how our children thanked him for his Emperor's Day gift.
Makim-san, 4ヶ月前の天皇誕生日を覚えていますか? Do you remember Emperor's Day 4 months ago, Miss Makim?
Hi, Tomibe-san. Yes, Tomibe-san.
I purchased bananas at Baguio Market for the children as my congratulatory present.
Yes, I remember that.
I expected gratitude the Japanese way. You know, with one boy appointed leader to give thanks for the group and order the other children to bow. But, to my surprise, the American children behaved much differently.
Oh? How so?
Well, after dividing the bananas among themselves equally, every child, even the smallest ones, shook my hand and said, "Thank you very much, Commander." This impressed me very much. It showed the differences in our thinking and how our children were educated.
Impressed him.
Yes, it did, Dr. Mather. He admired the children's fairness and independence.
I suppose I could see that.
Do you know when Tomibe-san's leaving, Arthur?
3 days from now.
Well, I think that the committee should give him some sort of farewell party.
I second that.
Me too, but what are we going to feed everyone?
I'll talk with Alex about scrounging up some coffee and a cake or something.
Before he left, I asked Miss McKim to please say "Auld Lang Syne" to Tomibe-san for me, and give him my note saying that I will long remember the Japanese classes when he conveyed to us the spirit of Japan, and that if each person is, in a sense, an ambassador from his native land, then he has done his country a great service in here. August 14, 1944. We heard Mr. Tomibe's military voice bellow at 7:30 a.m. as he gave his farewell speech during roll call. Miss McKim was the last one to speak with him before he left Camp Holmes.
Tomibe-san, 本当に私が通訳しなくて大丈夫ですか? Are you sure you don't want me to translate for you, Tomibe-san?
Eh, 大丈夫です。マキムさん、これは私自身で話すべきことだと思います。Yes, I am sure. I think I should do this by myself, Miss Makim.
Please call me Nelly. That's what my family and close friends call me.
Then it is a great honor to be your friend, Nelly-san.
I will never forget you, ever, Tomibe-san.
And I will never forget you either.
Well, I suppose we'd better head over to the parade ground. Everyone's waiting.
I am being transferred to Manila to another position and must say goodbye. We have become friends under the difficult conditions of war, and I hope that after peace, we could be friends again under better conditions.
The entire group of Americans spontaneously clapped to his speech. Later today, Miss McKim came down to our dugout to give me a special message from Tomibe-san.
Is anyone home?
Oh, hello. Come in, Miss McKim.
Hi, Natalie. Oh, hi, Jerry.
Hi, Miss McKim. Have a seat.
Thank you. I can't stay. I just wanted to tell you, Natalie, that Tomibe-san was terribly pleased with your note. He asked me to send you his very best wishes and thanks, and to say, O daiji ni.
What does that mean?
Please take care of yourself.
I think I'm going to cry.
Me too.
A lot of people are going to miss that guy. People were actually asking for his autograph before he left.
I know. Tomibe-san wrote a poem to go with Jim's. After this, I'm going to deliver the translation to Jim. I've translated Tomibe-san's poem for you, Jim. Here you go. It's the last thing he asked me to translate.
Thank you. You know, Tomibe-san and I became good friends.
I know. Tomibe-san told me he was very sad about leaving. I wonder if we'll ever see him again.
I'd sure like to. Would you mind reading it to me, Miss McKim?
Okay. But don't mind me if I get a little weepy. Okay, here goes. You are a young man bearing upon your shoulders your fatherland. I am like you. We have become friends here. But if the fate of our countries demands it, I am sure that we will confront each other bravely. However, into the dawn of peace, our friendship will be deeper than before.
This concludes Episode 28. Be sure to tune in for the next episode of Forbidden Diary, the true World War II story of Natalie Crowder, based on her secret journal written from a Japanese prison camp in the Philippines.